Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. This episode is brought to you by CrossCheck, one of the first mandatory QA processes in the translation industry since 2005. Now you can prove how good of a translator you are and document it to your clients with a personalized seal. So CrossCheck points out all those embarrassing mistakes even professionals sometimes make, like double words, mistyped or forgotten numbers, omitted glossary terms, you get it. If you translate with Trottos, use the CrossCheck Trottos Studio plugin, available for free in the Trottos App Store, to your QA translation work in real time. For those of you not translating using Trottos, when you are done with the project, you can upload the bilingual files at runcrosscheck.com and check for errors in an instant. To prove a project went through a rigid Q&A process, CrossCheck generates the CrossCheck seal, which is a link unique for each project, and you can deliver it to your clients where they can confirm your effort. Go to runcrosscheck.com for more information. That's runcrosscheck.com. Simply register your email and try it out for free today. Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you're all doing well today, wherever you are right now. Today, we're going to talk about content marketing. I've received requests for more information on content marketing for translators directed at translation clients. So here we go. Content marketing is an important part of inbound marketing. And inbound marketing is, according to me, an important long-term strategy to attract translation clients to you. I teach inbound marketing for translators and interpreters, and it means using online marketing to attract clients to you rather than actively reaching out directly to potential translation clients through direct mail, calling, etc. Both strategies are important. Inbound is more long-term and passive. Content marketing is a part of inbound marketing, and it means that you strategically create and distribute content in order to attract and qualify and convert leads. But it's much more than writing blog posts. So for content marketing to work, you have to have a plan for it. And you need to really know your ideal client well, or your buyer persona, which is another name for it. With me today, I have a fellow translator and content marketing agency owner who has given presentations and workshops on content marketing on several occasions for the translation industry. I attended one of her workshops and I really, really liked it. And I wanted to invite her to the podcast to share her knowledge with you too. She is the founder of Flying Cat Marketing, an SEO-driven content marketing agency, and has been a translator since 2009. Welcome to the podcast, Maeva Fuentes.
Thank you so much, Tess. It's an honor to be here.
It's very nice having you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, where you come from, and your career in translation, languages that you work with, and so forth.
Sure. So currently, we're chatting from my sister's home in Los Angeles, which mm-hmm. is where I come from. Yep. Actually, a suburb about an hour east of Los Angeles. My parents are translators. My dad is Colombian. My mm-hmm. mom is French. So I did follow in their footsteps. into the translation industry so long ago. Now I live in Barcelona, and we had just spoken about how I got there.
Yeah.
Series of events, going to live with my, get to know my French family. And I ended up in Spain, where I've been for the last 6.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So joining the translation industry, I did just follow in my parents' footsteps. My father now does linguistic validation. So it's not, it's a form of translation, but not the same exactly. But anyway, our
translation companies,
he does it for, I'm not sure what kind of companies he does it for. I think they're clinical research companies.
Mm-hmm.
So there is translation involved, but it's just a lot more than just translation. It's a lot,
yes,
of interviews of patients and surveys, and it's market research with a touch of translation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I went in and I started in legal translation, actually, and I got I started, like many translators do, of course, I was dabbling in a lot of areas trying to find my niche. And I began doing legal translation. After a while, I felt that I needed a little more formal education in that matter. And I did a master's in legal translation, where I was in a course with some other lawyers and translators. It was very enriching. And I became more specialized in legal translation little by little. I started getting interested in marketing translation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't blame you.
Yeah. it's creative. It's fun. And actually, for a while in legal translation, I had been very interested in plain English. And I did a series of talks on it with Richard Lackey,
mm-hmm,
about plain English and legal translation in clear communication. And somehow I feel that that also overlaps in marketing translation, because it was all about clarity, communication, getting, yeah, everybody on the same page. And I just began to resonate a lot more with marketing translation. And I slowly began to get into copywriting.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into, so copywriting, it was like websites, social media copy, sales copy, and that transitioned into content, what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
When I began to write blog posts for certain clients. And after a while, I noticed that there was a lack of strategy. So my clients would come to me and say, write about X topic or write about that topic. So, mm-hmm, I would write about it.
Mm-hmm.
With no further guidance other than them telling me what topic to write about. So,
yeah.
Topic, right. And I started to wonder why, why write about this?
Mm-hmm.
What is it bringing? What return are they getting on the investment that they're paying for me to write these blog posts?
Mm-hmm.
So with this particular client, I had already been running my own blog for a while and experimenting with SEO, and I decided to propose to do some strategy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a big impact. It was a big difference. And I realized then that I really liked to see this impact that my work directly had on these businesses. And little by little, I realized that I couldn't do it all as one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be the one writing and the one strategizing and seeing things both in the weeds, doing the work, and also on a longer vision.
Now, did you study content marketing strategy, or are you self-learned?
Self-learned. Like,
okay,
most, I've now been interacting with a lot of marketers and a few other agency owners, and they're all self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need a formal education. I think the best education that you can get in content marketing is just experimenting and doing it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I built the team, and now I've still been freelancing. And in 2021, my plan is to pause freelancing activities to just focus on the agency.
And with freelancing, you mean translation?
Translation and writing.
Okay. Okay. And how many employees do you have now?
So they're all on a freelance basis.
Okay.
Part-time.
Mm-hmm.
but I have one project manager, one operations manager who's just going to start in January. And then I'm also going to be hiring a new project manager and then a graphic designer and a couple of writers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And are your clients from all over the world or mostly Spain or?
Well, from all over. Yeah. I have a couple in Berlin. I have one in London. I have one in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. One in Vancouver. A couple in Belgium. They're spread out.
Yeah.
But I would say North America and Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. And the global customer base is one thing that I like about our industry, and I guess your industry too then.
Yeah.
So, okay, but let's talk about content marketing. Why should we translators use content marketing? What are the benefits?
Yeah, so content marketing, like you mentioned in the introduction, is an important part of inbound marketing.
Mm-hmm.
The main inbound marketing that I believe most translators rely on is word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
referrals and those kind of things, which is also a form of inbound. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's a form of inbound marketing because you do that a bit passively, right?
Yes.
You just get the referrals or you don't get them. You don't do anything intentionally about that.
Mm-hmm.
So content marketing is creating that kind of intention around attracting people to you.
Yep.
And what I think is interesting about the translation industry, and which also makes it challenging about the translation industry, is that a lot of our clients don't understand it. So it's one way to educate them. But there are a lot of benefits to content marketing, and it just depends on your goals. So content marketing could be either using your blog or just regularly posting on LinkedIn. But basically what it is having a voice consistently online.
Mm-hmm.
Content marketing is how you build an online presence, because content could be one LinkedIn post or one tweet that counts as content.
Mm-hmm.
What my focus is on are blogs. What's challenging again about translators is that they're a service-based business. And for service-based businesses, it's gold. Content marketing is gold because it's a service that your client can't really do. So they're relying on you to be an expert and to help their brand. So it's how you can show them that you understand what they're going through. And also it helps, as you mentioned, qualify the right kind of clients. So the mm-hmm. kind of content that you're creating is what's going to attract or repel people from mm-hmm. services. So
now if you would look at my content marketing strategy, you would probably have a lot of things that you could improve when it comes to the strategy. But I have noticed that, you know, if I have a good website and I do blog on the website and I do write articles on LinkedIn and I do write posts on LinkedIn, I mean, I see the effects. I do get clients contacting me through these platforms. So for me, that is the biggest benefit.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. I mean, the point of it is getting clients in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. But the hard part is the consistency and the strategy, I think. So let's dive into it a little bit more and how to do it. So the first step is creating content, of course, or the first step for being able to create content is to know our target market or ideal customer really, really well, so we can speak directly to them and we understand their problems. How can we find out more, or how do you go about finding out more about your ideal clients?
Tess, you're hitting the nail on the head. At first, when you said the first step is creating content, I was like, no, that's not the first step.
Yeah.
Then you rephrased, the first step is knowing the customer well. And I think that this is where a lot of content creators, they cheat. I'm trying to think of the expression. It's like drop the ball. Yeah, drop the ball is what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They assume too much. And it's not only that they're assuming they understand the pain points of their customers, their real daily frustrations.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a lot of content that translators create, it's going to say, do you want to increase your impact internationally? And that is, yeah, that is what they want to do. But is that the daily frustrations that they're having? I feel like it's not exactly digging deep into what this person's daily life is like and how translation fits into their workflow and how working with you is going to either reduce their headaches or help them look better at their jobs.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I said cheat was because I attended your workshop and I am one of the ones that have probably cheated and not really because your recommendation is to actually go out and interview our clients.
Yeah.
Sorry if I interrupted you. That is the first step, right?
The first step, I would say interviewing them, either interviewing them and getting them on the phone, on a call, or sending a survey, but on a call is always better. And a lot of translators and a lot of clients that I've interacted with have told me, my clients are too busy. They're not going to get on a call. How could I ask them that? I'm nervous. I say, well, what are you nervous about? The worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to say that they're too busy. If you have such a relationship with your client that they're going to say, how dare you ask me for 15 minutes of my time? I'm never working with you again. Maybe that's problematic in another way.
Well, for me, they preferred to answer questions by email.
But that's okay too. Although the only problem with that is that you can't probe them for more information.
Yeah.
But that's already better than not talking to them at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of hierarchy that I have it in is the most useful one is going to be getting on the phone with them.
Yeah.
And that's not only for getting information for your content, but it's going to help you understand how they view translation, what their workflow is like, how you can, maybe there's an added value that you can provide to them that you would have never known about unless you had spoken to them.
Mm-hmm.
I have one client that's a translation agency and he wanted to be on all the calls with me, with his clients. He was already surprised that any of them would get on a call with me. And some very important people got on the calls and he decided to join them to kind of build some more, to bond more with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty surprised at their translation workflows, some issues that they were having that he could solve, but he didn't even know. They didn't even think to ask him. For example, they wanted copywriting in another language and they didn't make the connection that him as a translation agency could also provide copywriting services. That didn't even pass in their brain. So just having that kind of conversation, they were surprised to discover that he could also provide that. So you see, A, they have more needs that you can solve. B, there's something about your messaging that is not clear what you have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps you find out how you can address all of those pain points in your content.
Mm-hmm. So thinking back to us freelance translators now, if we are going to interview our customers, which you recommend, what kind of questions should we ask?
So there are service related pain points, non-service related pain points, and online habits. And I'll go through it now one by one. Not all the questions, but so service related pain points are directly related to translation. So for example, what does your workflow look like from getting the text to be translated, getting it translated, and getting it out into the world?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people need to approve this? Who's writing it? What's important to you in the translation process? What do you need? What does this workflow look like for you now? And what does it look like ideally for you?
Mm-hmm.
And if I decided to quit translation and go surf in Portugal for the rest of my life, what would you do to go find somebody to replace me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is if you have a regular client, for example. But then you can start to get the idea of where they go look for translators. Are they going to search on Google? Are they going to ask their peers? Do they have some kind of tender process that they must adhere to? you find out where they go looking for them.
And that was just, that was enlightening to me, their answers to that question.
What did they say, if you don't mind sharing?
Oh, first of all, they said, well, we do hope you won't disappear. But then they just mentioned that the resources they use, and a lot of them said LinkedIn or the Translators Association in that country, mm-hmm. Or PROS.
Okay. Yeah. So they knew about PROS.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing also to know, if, because it helps you clarify some questions that aren't even content related. I see on these translator forums all the time, should I use PROS? Is it worth it? Well, if you talk to your customer, your clients, and see that they look for translators there. Well,
yes, they do. Unfortunately, the postings there, some of them have really low, the payment is low for the posted jobs, but just by being in the database, I think can be beneficial actually. Mm-hmm. And you can create great client relationships anyway.
Yeah.
Through that. Yeah.
So those kind of questions related to the service, you can also ask them, what's your favorite thing about working with me specifically? Like, why do you keep coming back to me and translation jobs to me, which is very valuable because you'll find out what they value about you. So asking those kind of questions, service related questions. And then non-service related questions. So these are going to be about them and their workflow. You want to find out what title they have at their job. I guess I'm speaking in the context of your clients being members of a business, so not just individuals. That would be a slightly different approach. But if they're like the marketing head or the international acquisition department head, I don't know, some in a business, then this non-service related pain points is when you ask them things about their role, their day-to-day life. So what are your responsibilities? You said, like, what does a normal day look like? What is something that frustrates you? Oh, this could be something about in the first section, translation service related pain points, is what frustrates you about the translation process, either with me or with other service providers. You're going to have to leave your ego at the door for this one, just to kind of understand. So non-service related pain points are things about their specific job.
Yeah.
Their responsibilities. Yeah. And what are their responsibilities when it comes to getting this translated content out? And then online habits. So asking them, where do they go to learn? Sometimes you have to word it differently, because in translation, most of our clients, unless they run translation agencies, if you work with agencies, but if you work with direct clients, they're not necessarily going to be going looking for translation, like to learn about translation on the internet.
No.
So you would have to ask them more questions about, I don't know, where do you go to learn about international expansion, or whatever it is that your translation plays a role in? You might have to look a level higher than just the translation process to see where they're learning about this. And if they're not, then just asking them where they spend time online personally and in their businesses. Is there any brands that they follow or any professionals that they follow? Why? What do they like about their content? Of course, trying to lead it into either the translation space, or if they do marketing. I'll give the example again of my client, the translation agency. He does work for PR agencies and advertising agencies. So we ask them where they go to learn or to be inspired about multilingual PR campaigns or international PR campaigns and those kind of things. And we found out that they do follow newsletters, and they follow things about their competitors' brands. So in our content strategy, we are doing actually case studies about their competitors who are also doing multilingual strategies and highlighting what was good there. And then we also did case studies about his clients. So we're keeping it all in a circle of what they would want to be interested about reading, which isn't necessarily going to be how grammar is different and how punctuation is different on one language and another language. That's not really what interests them.
And the online, where they hang out online, and all these questions that you just mentioned, that is actually one of the things that I noticed that I would need to dig deeper into and clarify, and not just get an answer online. That was easily misunderstood. And I think that what you just said about journals and groups and stuff, that would be very, very valuable.
It is valuable. And yeah, it's because it, when you do a survey, you can get a lot of data, but sometimes they'll just answer in one word or two words, or they mm-hmm. haven't understood the question the way that you want, that you meant mm-hmm. to ask. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you say, where do you hang out online? And for example, they may follow a bunch of newsletters of their competitors, or they may follow people on LinkedIn, but they're thinking, oh, or maybe they're only thinking, since you're asking them in a professional, maybe they're only thinking LinkedIn or where they hang out online for work, but actually they also spend a lot of time in Facebook groups mm-hmm. and specific Slack groups, or they spend a lot of time on Instagram, but they don't mention it because they think you're only asking them about things related to translation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So once we've interviewed the clients and gotten some, how many clients should we interview?
I've gotten some pretty good information from three before, but it depends on the variety of kind of clients you have. I would say you identify your best client before you interview them, and interview them instead of all of your clients.
Yeah.
So the best client being not only the one that pays the most, but the one that's the least headache, the one that values you the most, those kind of people, because those are the ones you want to attract more of.
Yeah.
What would be ideal is that you interview enough that you can start to predict their answers,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that's not always possible. So, however, I imagine that a lot of translators don't have a giant roster of amazing clients. Like
I sent out the questions to 8 clients, both direct and agency clients, where I had a good relationship with the project manager. I started seeing some patterns, actually.
8 is a good number. I mean, I say sometimes 5 to 10
mm-hmm.
is great. It starts to give you so much insight. And like you said, Tess, patterns, you mm-hmm. start to notice things that you would have never known if you didn't reach out.
Yeah. But alas, for myself, this is where my process has halted for now. So what should I do after I get all these answers?
Yeah. So after you get all these answers, that's when you start mapping out what kind of content to create. So when you go, the things that are pretty interesting are going to be their pain points. So I like to create a lot of content around the pain points. And what's interesting to do here is to try to map out what is called a customer journey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they become aware of the problem, and the problem being this is a little too far up in the journey where they become aware they want translation. You probably don't want to be creating content yet at that stage, because it's going to be a while before you can convince them. But then there's in the middle consideration. So that's when they're considering different solutions. So do I want to have my bilingual intern do this? Do I want to get this machine translated? Do I want to get a premium translator to do it? And that's kind of middle of the funnel. And then there's the decision phase of the customer journey, where they decided they want a premium translator to translate this.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what kind of content you all. This is where I think that it's important to differentiate yourself, not from the machine translation, not from the cheap translation agencies, not from the students, but differentiate yourself from the other premium translators. So how are you going to do that? You're going to do that because you understand their workflows, their day-to-day issues, and you have something that those other premium translators might not have, and it's a deep insight in their day-to-day. So you start to map out what issues they're having at that point of the workflow, which is either going to be choosing a translator or, I don't know, reducing the amount of time spent in quality assurance or country-specific checking. You know, sometimes they have a really complex workflow and they'll have shared that with you. Mm-hmm. And there's probably things that they're doing that's causing them a lot of headache that you that don't need to be done, that they could solve those issues in an easier way. And that's the kind of content that you start creating. But you need to dig deep and kind of understand what their issues are for the content to create. Now, the reason that I asked to find out where they spend time online is also because you need to think about how you're going to distribute the content, because you don't want to just create it and then sit and wait. So finding out where they spend time online is going to help you know not just how to distribute it, but what kind of content to create. So some people will go look on Google for a translator, but not all of them will. Some of them will just directly ask their peers. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do for that circumstance? So you're going to find out where they spend time online, who they're inspired by, and see if you can get into those channels somehow. And you might have to tweak the content to be able to fit into those channels.
So for my situation, then, their struggles, they already knew they needed translations. Mm-hmm. So their struggles were how to find a reliable one or high quality one, and onboarding them and educating them and stuff like that. So what, for example, what kind of content should I write then? Or should I go back and ask more questions about higher up in the funnel, so to speak?
So I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about what's their struggle in finding a high quality one. What is their goal in finding a high quality translator?
Okay.
You know, so what is it? Have they had an experience of a bad translator? What
yes.
did it mean for them?
Yeah, the common thread or theme was that it is hard to find one with the correct specialization and that is reliable and responds to emails, for example.
So you know what's gold in this kind of situation is case studies.
Mm-hmm.
So getting together with your customers, now that they've told you they had an issue, working with you has removed that issue because you're reliable. You help them save time. You help them feel safe that what they're putting out in, you translate into Swedish, right?
Yes.
What they're putting out in Sweden doesn't have this horrible threat of whatever happened on Amazon. I think I saw something on Amazon.
Yep.
Like little penises or so. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on the show, sorry. But it was pretty severe.
It was to the point where people were starting to think that they did it on purpose to get publicity.
Could be some PR move, but I think a lot of brands want to feel safe that that's not going to happen to them. And one way, which is really, you know, bottom of the funnel, so content that works for people trying to make decisions, is case studies. So working together with your customers to tell the story of where they were before and where they are now and what your role was in that. So it doesn't I like to show results, but translation's not always tied. There's so much involved in, if you're doing marketing translation, for example, it's not just going to be the translation that makes the whole difference. So what could be, there are a lot of aspects that you could show, and it depends on the pain points that they have. So if the pain point is the workflow, then you can talk about how working with you improved the workflow, but you'd have to interview the client to make this kind of case study, if they'd be open to it, or you could write it yourself, either anonymously about the client or mention them in it, which would be even better. But case studies are gold for this kind of situation because they have they're scared of something, and you're showing that you've done this before with other clients and that they don't need to be scared of that. I think what's important about case studies is to highlight your client more than yourself. So make it a story about them. And how they had a problem and how they solved that problem, but then you are a part of it. That's what's important, because their peers, whoever's going to be reading this, is not interested in you, the translator. What they're interested in is seeing a problem that your client had that they have currently, and that they see that this problem was solved, and then they want to figure out how they did it so they can copy that. That's what case studies are about. So putting yourself in there can be done. The case study is about the client, it's not you. So, but you put yourself in there in a way that shows that you were also instrumental to them solving their problem.
Do you have any other suggestions for content? Not necessarily for my situation, but in general, then higher up in the funnel or lower down?
I think that I think it's important to get into your niche. So to not only talk about translation, and this is tricky because I'm also really into creating bottom of the funnel content. So making sure that all of the content that you're creating has a call to action and that that can directly bring more clients. But sometimes if you're in a very niche space, you have to show that you are in the circle, that you are one of them and that you understand the niche. So for example, now in my content marketing agency, I specialize in hospitality tech. So property management software, channel managers, and I've never worked in hospitality. I don't have any short-term rental properties. Now I know a lot about it and I feel like maybe I will, but currently I don't. So how do I get to be the go-to person in hospitality tech space, which now I've landed a few clients for that specific reason? They say, I've heard you're the person to go to for hospitality tech. So how did I do that? Well, I created content by interviewing the major influencers in hospitality tech, the people that everybody else wants to listen to. And I just highlighted that I didn't talk about me. We just talked about how people are buying hospitality tech, what's going on in short-term rental space. And I became an expert in this space. And it's only because I am featuring other influencers in my content. And I think that that's quite important because that way you're using your content A, to show that you're an expert in your niche, B, to connect with the major influencers. It's also a networking tool. C, when you're creating content that features those people, a lot of the times they distribute it. So you're getting free distribution from the top leaders in the industry you're trying to break into. It's a big deal. It carries a lot of clout to have them in your content. So I think featuring important people in the industry you're trying to be the go-to translator in is a very powerful way of creating content.
Okay, good. Very good tips here. So, and lots of ideas. What, do you have any other tips before we wrap this up for content marketing and what to create?
Yes, I would say it's important to look ahead. So if you try to create some categories and look at content holistically, so say if you do want to target some SEO keywords, like the important ones, you know, you have Swedish translator, Colorado-based Swedish translator, or Swedish marketing translation, Swedish translations profession, make a list of all these keywords that you need to attack, make a list of all the influencers you want to interview, and just sit down and think about it for a while. How can you address all of the pain points that you've identified that these people have? If you can't address it yourself, it's fine. If you're not the expert in content workflow management with translation being a part of it, get an expert to come and help you create this content that helps for networking. Just list out everything that is relevant to your clients and their pain points within the translation space, and then make a plan so that you know what you're going to create and how you're going to distribute it. And make it systematic.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you so much. And I know you have in your workshops, you have a worksheet for that. That's really helpful.
Yes.
Maybe we can share that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. That would be very, very valuable. So we will put a link to her handy dandy worksheet in the show notes. Thank you so much, Maeva.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to chat with you, Tess.
It was a pleasure having you. Content marketing, it may not be for everyone because it does require both time and being consistent, but it is a great way to both rank on Google and to establish ourselves as authorities in our niche. Plus, it's absolutely free.
Yes. And it's fun.
Yes. Thank you, Maeva. I have learned so much from you in the workshop and the worksheet, and I am sure the listeners will find this very valuable too. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank the listeners. I hope you've been able to get some ideas on content marketing as a strategy to attract clients to you. I try to use content marketing by publishing articles, like I said, on LinkedIn and some blog posts on my website. But I have to say, I'm probably not as strategic about it as I could be. And I think I have a lot to learn from Maeva and other content marketing experts. You will find all the links, the links to the worksheet to learn more about Maeva and related material in the show notes, which can be found at marketingtipsfortranslators.com. There you can also leave comments, ask questions, and share the episode with anyone else that might find it useful. And if you enjoyed this episode, you can make sure you don't miss any other episodes by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts or to my newsletter to get each new episode sent out to you. So thanks again for listening. Thank you, Maeva, for coming on. And I wish you all a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye, Tess. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.